Hello, good morning everyone. This is Sam, and it's such a wonderful honor to be with all of you, and I'm sitting in a room here right next to Pancho.
Hi, hello, good morning and good afternoon to the rest of the planet.
And also Annie and Terry are right next to us too, and they're smiling here. Maybe they can just say a quick hello.
Hi, everybody.
So we're all here at Canticle Farm in Oakland, which is in the Fruitvale District, and we're in the upstairs of Brother Son Farmhouse, which was the original building, as I understand it, on this property. And you'll get to hear from them in a bit more about what inspired them to start and dream of a place like Canticle Farm and their connection to this neighborhood, which is quite deep and extraordinary. In terms of a basic introduction, from my own personal experience, I met them a couple years ago when I first started coming to events at Casa de Paz, which was a house that's part of Canticle Farm, where Pancho moved in with a few other people, including Adelaja Simon, who was interviewed in a forest call several months ago. And so they are the people who have been living in this collection of there's five houses now, and they've removed the fences between the houses. And it's a growing community here dedicated to service, and to we grow much of our own food and are really trying to embody a lot of the principles of the work that Reconnects that Joanna Macy has spent so much time developing. They're both very inspired also by friend St. Francis and of Assisi, and the idea of embodying those virtues and values and that inspiration in the daily work of living in a neighborhood in East Oakland. So I think that's probably a general introduction. And
I just would like to add, this is Pancho, and sending my love waves from here, from Fruitvale. Just a few moments ago, Sister Annie was talking with her mom and her dad that they want to get into this crazy technology, and it is, you know, incredible, the 21st century, that, you know, they just live a few blocks from here in order to make all these connections. But one of the things that I really, really moved me when I met this beautiful family, and I met them at different points. I remember it was through the Metro Center for Nonviolence with Michael Negler that I met Annie, and then Dominic Barker, that is doing extraordinary revolutionary work on restorative justice. He held a few days of a workshop on restorative circles, and then I was lucky to meet Kiara. That's their eldest daughter. I met her like years ago. And then I was lucky also to come to their home many years ago with David Hartso when he was sharing some of his experiences about like radical nonviolence. And it's been always my experience when I'm around these beings that there's this sense of kinship, this sense of family, this truly revolutionary feeling. I mean, if the revolution is about anything, it's about family, it's about feeling home. And here, when you come here, you feel home. And I've witnessed how people from the part of the planet we call Nigeria or Mexico or India or you name it, they come to this place and they say, this reminds me of home. And how could that be, right? How could it be that some people from Nigeria say, oh, wow, that smells. Or, oh, those flowers, all the smells of the raised beds and the horse manure or the jasmine that they made it. So you see how this family have put so much love in this land, and the land is just working through them to get rid of all these nonsense divisions. And so it's this multi-generational work that pours through them. And just as a way to check in as well, yesterday, Brother Terry and Sister Kiara. Kiara is, again, the eldest daughter. She's 25. And that's great because she's kind of keeping the track of how long they have been in this particular piece of land, because they're like the fifth generation living here. But she was like, wow, like, she's an Oaklander, of course, because she was born here. And it was so inspiring just to feel like, wow, like, thank you, you know, for just holding this space. And I was like, thank you, sister. You know, you are the fruit, just the fruit of so many generations, you know, including your grandma, that would be so, you know, happy. And you feel the groundedness and the shining eyes coming from this incredible being that is the fruit of these two very special human beings that are right here in front of me. So that would be my way to introduce them. You know, the revolution is love. The revolution is kinship. The revolution is family. The revolution is feeling home. But there is no homeless, because home is everywhere you go. So if every single person comes here and feels home, that's it for me. So thank you for your attention.
Wow, what an introduction.
So, Kanchan, should we begin?
Go ahead.
For those thoughts.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Annie and Terry, hello, and welcome to the Forest Call. And wondering if you have any comments related to that stirring introduction, or any thoughts you'd like to see people to start out with.
Well, I'm sitting here just feeling deeply grateful, and I think that that is the thing I most want to share, is that to find myself at this point with people like Pancho and Adelijah and Sam and the other folks who have been pulled here to come be part of the widening circles of what we're doing on this one block, is just, it's very humbling is the word that comes to me, as in hummus and close to the earth. It feels that way. I'm actually just feeling like life is living me, and there's a flow that is just of grace, and I couldn't ask for anything more in this time when so many things are unraveling around us, systems are unraveling, and this time of great danger and crisis and opportunity to be able to be rooted in a community and in land and in a place is a tremendous gift.
And one of the things that I not only was inspired by what Pancho said, and also Annie just now, and also the framing of this forest call in this idea of beginning a larger shift on a local level and also inside your own heart, and that this idea of removing fences is and barriers is part of one of the big challenges that we're facing, is that how do we invite our neighbors and everyone that wants to be family, to really have that connection. I'm wondering what your thoughts.
So when people ask, you know, what is it we're doing here, it's not easy to answer in one or two or even three lines. It takes more like several paragraphs. But if I were going to boil it down to something really simple, I would say it's really about being neighbors in the sense of what's been lost, what a neighborhood used to be. When I grew up a few blocks from here, we knew our neighbors. We knew the people on either side across the street. We pretty much knew everybody up and down the street. And we played with the kids in the neighborhood, and we rode our bikes, and we walked places. And now in this very same neighborhood, there are bars on windows, and fences around property and front yards have been cemented over, and there's dogs that are there who bark. And that is one way for people to find security in a place where there's so little of that sense of being safe. And that's a really important thing, to feel safe in your home and on your block. And this strategy provides some safety, but it also cuts us off deeply from what I think really our true safety is and where it lies, which is in our relationships. And I love when we have groups of high school kids who come and we take them around and talk about this very thing, and they can see that. They instantly get that when you put up bars and fences and dogs, that you get cut off from the people around you who are you, where in your safety lies. And so what we're really trying to do here is live in a way that can demonstrate that our safety is in our relationships, and that's just about kicking down fences, sharing, growing of food, greeting people on the street, being neighbors in the way that neighbors used to be able to look out for each other and know each other. And then in those relationships, everything starts to shift. And so that's where we get this idea of change happening one heart, one home, one block at a time. And I love this phrase that is attributed to St. Francis, even though he didn't actually say it. I love it. And it's one of the things that we say about what we're doing here, which is preach the gospel at all times. If necessary, use words.
Well, and just sitting here, seeing the shining eyes of Brother Terry and Sister Annie, you know, I feel like we could be speaking like so much about all their journey. But I really would love for them to share a little bit of that journey. Mm-hmm. That you know, how is that? You know, Annie was with the Catholic Worker Movement and meeting Dorothy Day, and then Brother Terry was ordained to be a Franciscan priest, and all of a sudden, you know, like in their desire to bring awareness of the love of all humanity and Mother Earth, decided to do anything with their hands to do. Disobey with great love and do civil disobedience to stop the nuclear weapons and nuclear madness, and then they met, and then they fall in love, and then now we have 5 children. And so I would love to see, you know, what is that like, how it started, that love or simplicity. And Terry's just pointing right now, Sister Annie. Like, so maybe we...
She is the keeper of the stories of the family.
So maybe we just go back in their individual journey.
And yeah, the individual journey part, and in particular, kind of each of you has had, I mean, this has been one of the great joys of getting to know Annie and Terry, is that they are, I mean, Annie seems to be a little bit like Zelig or something, like the Woody Allen character in this movie that ends up with like all these famous people. She's just had these connections with incredible mentors and figures in history, and it's so impressive the way she's kind of brought all these threads together. And Terry has had such a variety of experiences, and he brings it all together with the soul of a poet, and yet you know, from military experience as a lawyer, and as a Franciscan, and so as a father. So it they're both incredible. So I'll let Annie. All right, here's Terry.
So I'm going to follow that, Sam, because one of the things I've found that's an obstacle in my life is to be distracted by the circumstances around other people's lives. And one of our focuses is that this does happen one heart, one home, one block at a time. And that means that this has to happen everywhere and to everyone. And how that happens is very close in, as David White says in his poem, start close in. Each one of us has to start. And if I focus on the circumstances of other people's lives, what they've done, their experience, things like that, then I can actually be distracted from what I'm called to do in my own life, which is start close in, start with the first step, as David White says, the step that I don't want to take. That's the place where I need to put my attention.
Well, I was about to say that Terry takes literally that quote of preach the gospel at all times, if necessary, use words. And I was worried he was going to sit here and not use any for the whole call. So I'm glad we had some from him, and hopefully there'll be, maybe you'll have a poem to share. One of the most beautiful things that's happening in our community is to see people being most deeply and authentically themselves. And one way that's manifesting with Terry is he will, in the middle of a meeting or a moment where it's most needed, have a poem to share. So, well, let's see. How could I quickly tell this story? I think that Terry and I, both from the beginning of all time, you know, were called and pulled by the life of Francis of Assisi. And my own story begins in this place where my family settled four generations ago in a Franciscan parish with lots of Franciscan priests, and me growing up wanting to be one because that seemed like the best way to follow the call of Christ, to be with the suffering and to be a peacemaker. And Terry found a pull from a different direction, but that's where we met, and that's how we found our common ground, first at the Nevada test site working on a campaign to end nuclear weapons testing, and then just wanting to find a way to embody the values of justice, peace, and deep care and love for all of creation, and understanding ourselves as connected and not separate from that. And that's where we get the name for our community, because the Canticle was a song of praise that came out of Francis of Assisi at a time of his life, toward the end of his life, when he had the stigmata, so he's got the wounds and his bleeding and his pretty much lost his eyesight and is on the margins of the community. So at a time of the great unraveling of his own personal life, he sings this song of praise where he understands himself connected to Brother Sun and Sister Water and Sister Moon and Stars. And so we say in this time of the great unraveling of our own time that Canticle Farm is our song. And we're here to sing a song of connection to all of life, to the people here in this part of the planet, and to the more than human world here. And when we sing together, amazing transformation can happen on all levels. So it's a Franciscan story in the broadest sense, and we love that Francis is the patron saint of ecology and someone that everyone can relate to. And he's often reduced to being out in the garden in the bird bath, and he's there here in our community as well. But we also understand him to be the one who went to the Sultan as a peacemaker, and the one who reached out to the poor and suffering, and we are embodying those values here.
Thank you. I think one of the beautiful things also about Annie and Terry and I guess the experiment of Canticle Farm is there's, as people connect to each other and through service, it brings up interesting things about what, you know, about our limits. And I think one powerful area of inquiry for us as a community, and I'd be curious to hear what Terry and Annie think. There's this common phrase that good fences make good neighbors, and comes from this notion of wanting to set limits or knowing how much you can do. And I'd be really curious to hear either of your thoughts related to this idea of boundaries or limits or the value of fences, seeing as we're in a community that has really been evolving and changing, even as we're creating it and letting it grow.
So this is Terry, and I'll try to address that, Sam. I think that what we're trying to do is to see boundaries and fences as opportunities to reach out. That when those boundaries and fences are placed in order to keep us separate, that's actually an invitation to begin dialogue. And we want to start with our own hearts and the boundaries and the barriers in our own hearts. in order to, I would use the word forgiveness, to forgive ourselves and to find those barriers inside ourselves and work with those barriers, the shadows and the things that we reject and the suffering, and work with that in community. There's a couple things that are very important to Canticle Farm. One is that we're doing this in community. We are not doing it individually. And everyone that's coming here understands that at a very deep level, that this has to happen in community. We are not a bunch of individuals who have come together doing our separate projects. We are committed to a life together. And that means we're going to face some stuff that is going to pull up in ourselves these barriers and obstacles that we need to work with. So that's one thing. And the other thing that I want to mention about Canticle Farm, what we're trying to do here, is that we all recognize on one level or the other that there's a great unraveling occurring. There is a great turning also. I don't want to say miss that at all. That's what gives us the hope in the song. But the great unraveling, we're very conscious that there's a great unraveling happening in our earth and in our human societies. And there's tremendous costs that are being borne by people and the more than human world all over this planet. And so what I want to say about Canticle Farm is we have a very explicit, committed intention to live in this community, which is a community in East Oakland, in a very particular place, because this is where, for us, this is where we can be in contact daily with that unraveling. It's important for us not to try to escape it, but to feel it every day, to see it, and to share it with those who are most, who don't have any choice about the unraveling occurring in their lives. And so to share that with them and to, with them, come up with ways to address these boundaries and these obstacles to connection.
I'm almost tempted to ask Brother Terry to answer in poems. Like, one of the joys of being in this community is that he always, like, blesses with Rumi and Mary Oliver and Whitman. He's just incredible. I was just feeling that. And also another, I think, a very important human being in this community, because he's been behind the scenes, but I think that he's an architect of this love story. His name is a neighbor too, by the way, and his name is Louis Vitale. Louis Vitale is a Franciscan priest that you might know, has done like hundreds of times in jail and doing civil disobedience, and he, you know, his church is right here, St. Elizabeth, where they've been here this couple was married, and there's like baptized, and there's first communion, and he was the one, I think, at some point that's how I met Terry, when he was to be ordained as a priest, and then also met Annie, and then he was the one to tell Annie, like, you need a strong woman to be working with, like, this is too, like, sexist and patriarchal, so who's that a strong woman? Well, that's Joanna Macy. Introduced Annie to Joanna Macy, and then Annie became the personal assistant of Joanna Macy. So I'd love to see what is flowing through their heart of the poet and their heart of the mom, you know, because we all try to cultivate the heart of a mother, and I think that Louis has that quality there, like he's weaving and he's just wanted to be loved. So I don't know if there's anything there flowing through these two shining eyes that I'm seeing here.
Well, what I would say is that to address what you just said, Pancho, and Sam as well, about the people who have been in my life, once again, it's like just an experience of deep humility. And I have been so blessed to be able to spend my life doing what is most meaningful to me. I feel very blessed and grateful for that. I don't really know how I could be handling anything if I weren't able to have had this work first with Louis as his personal assistant, and looking to create the campaign at the test site. And I worked for the Franciscans for 25 years doing justice, peace, and integrity creation, and now with Joanna and this community. So it's all just been, once again, like I look over my life and feel so sorry for the moments that I lost trust, and it informs me now because it all feels like everything has been living me all along, and I'm the one who forgot. And I just want to get up every morning and know that no matter what comes, that there is a guiding force, a grace, a flow that I feel in right now that is just too beautiful, actually, for words.
Do you have a poem, Terry?
I have one. It's written by Mary Oliver, and I need to probably put it in context. I did some work with Bill Plotkin last year, and in that work on a vision quest, I was given the task. The word that came to me is to honor death, and it's a very important word for me to live in my life these days. And it's connected to St. Francis in the Canticle. St. Francis actually calls a death a sister death. And that's the way I want to approach death, is as a sister. And so Mary Oliver, in some ways, resonates with that. And I want to just share this poem, When Death Comes. When death comes like the hungry bear in autumn, when death comes and takes all the bright coins from his purse to buy me and snaps the purse shut, when death comes like the measles pox, when death comes like an iceberg between the shoulder blades, and I might add here, when death comes like the great unraveling, I want to step through the door full of curiosity, wondering, what is it going to be like, that cottage of darkness? And therefore, I look upon everything as a brotherhood and a sisterhood. And I look upon time as no more than an idea. And I consider eternity as another possibility. And I think of each life as a flower, as common as a field daisy, and as singular. And each name a comfortable music in the mouth, tending, as all music does, towards silence. And each body a lion of courage and something precious to the earth. When it's over, I want to say, all my life I was a bride married to amazement. I was the bridegroom taking the world into my arms. When it's over, I don't want to wonder if I have made of my life something particular and real. I don't want to find myself sighing and frightened or full of argument. I don't want to end up simply having visited this world.
Wow. Just let that sink in. It's one of the joys of being around here. We have Hafiz and Rumi and Mary Oliver and so many other poets flowing. I don't know if this could be a time to Canchancita, teacher, what are you saying to the questions or Habibi? Is there anything?
Do you have more questions, Sam? Like a couple of questions? We can start at 10, or we can start now. That's fine too.
Yes.
And Annie has a reflection to add.
Yeah, please, Annie.
Well, I love that Terry just mentioned Bill Plotkin, and I want to just say one of the things that feels so rich for me about what's happening here in this community is sort of the threads of a lot of different things coming together, and that would be integral nonviolence and the work that reconnects and Catholic worker movement and the work of that Bill Plotkin has brought forth. So I just was reflecting as I was listening to that poem that a few years ago, if you had asked me, could I die feeling like I had done what I came here to do, I would have said, wow, you know, I've had this most amazing life, and I feel so blessed by it, and being married and having my children, you know, was such a huge part of what I knew I was here to do. But there would have been, you know, for sure some sense of not fulfilling, you know, some piece of what I knew I was here to do, which had to do with being part of bringing forth this community. So I feel very deeply now that if I died tomorrow, I would not have any regrets about how I have chosen to spend my life. And I think that is such an invitation that, you know, Bill Plotkin talks about. We are each here to do our soul work, to find our unique niche and the thing that we are meant to bring forth. It's just, it's completely unique and something each of us is called to do. And that's a mythopoetic identity, and then it gets manifested through a particular kind of delivery system. So I would say that, you know, that's the invitation. Each of us is called to figure out what are we here to do. And I feel, once again, just the gratitude of the people who have come to help my soul work get manifested.
Thank you so much, Annie. I was just thinking, maybe could you tell us a little bit about what Canticle Farm is about and the vision of Canticle Farm before we move on to the Q&A session?
My somewhat tongue-in-cheek answer to that is no.
Okay.
Part of what we're doing here is trying to figure that out. And on a deeper level, again, what is manifesting here, and the people that have been drawn to this work bring a deep listening. We don't know what's going to happen here, because we don't know what's going to happen in the world. While we have faith and we come from different traditions and we have different ways of expressing that, there's also this element that things are in a balance. We really don't know what it means to unravel the way that it seems to be unraveling. And therefore, we don't know what kind of capacities are going to be called forth from us as a human species and as individuals. So Joanna Macy talks about in systems theory the concept of emergent properties. And so to use a very simple example, if I had a container of hydrogen and a container of oxygen, I would have no idea, most likely, what would happen if I combined those two elements. It would be impossible for me, just knowing hydrogen and just knowing oxygen and their gaseous characteristics and qualities, to come up with the idea that if I put them together in a particular way, or if they are attracted together, which is probably a better way of putting it, if they were attracted together and bound together in a particular way, there's no way I could come up with the idea of water. The fluidity of it, the taste of it, the coolness of it, the heat of it, the wonderful qualities and characteristics of water. And so in some ways we think and feel that we're kind of on that. That's where we are. We don't know. We can look around and we see a lot of different elements and qualities and characteristics. And what we're hoping for is it's going to come together through these different practices, very concrete practices of forgiveness, compassion, nonviolent communication, integral nonviolence, the work that reconnects, its work, inner work and outer work. And it's going to bring together this new possibility of emergent properties that we cannot foresee, that we cannot predict. And in fact, it would probably be, a problem or actually an obstacle to it happening to think that we could predict it, because then we would try to control it. And just as in the spiritual life, we're not in control. We can direct our attention to particular things, and we can direct our love and our compassion, but we are not in control of the results. We're waiting for something else to happen here. And so that's the wonderful thing about being part of this community, because we all seem to be, regardless of where we come from or what we describe as the story of our life and the experiences that have formed us, we all seem to be in agreement about that particular aspect of the work that we're trying to do here.
Wow, just beautiful, Terry. Beautiful. Thank you so much. So I think
so maybe
now
we can open it to questions.
Go ahead, Sam. What was it?
Well, maybe we can open it to questions now.
yeah, that's what I was
about to say.
Yeah. So, yeah, now I'm going to open it up for our callers. So if you have a question, just hit *6 and you will be put in the queue. While we wait, Sam, you can ask a question if you have something.
Another question. I would like to get a sense from Annie and Terry. Your connection to St. Francis and your spiritual work has been so important for you as individuals and also as a core unifying principle for Canticle Farm in the way you began it. I'm really curious to see or to get a sense of how you see, you know, even without predicting it, how you see that manifesting down the line. What does sort of the manifestation of St. Francis in this neighborhood look like?
So there's, I'm going to answer that in a particular way. And from our experience in working with the Nevada Desert Experience, which was an organization that was was and still is attempting to end nuclear weapons testing in the Nevada test site. When we brought together, and that was a faith-based organization. It is still a faith-based organization. I'm talking, I don't know why I'm talking about it as if it's past tense. and looking at me. The experience was that as we brought people together of various faiths, our initial attempts to do that were to be very ecumenical and very inclusive, and our method was to more or less come to the lowest common denominator, which really watered down the richness of each tradition. And it was very unsatisfying for it seemed like almost everyone involved. We would walk away from the rituals and the activities, and it was like no one was really happy with just dumbing down, you know, what was the faith-based aspects of the experience. And so at one point, we organized an event where people came, and I don't know what actually changed. It was like, just like there was more openness to everyone speaking out of their own tradition. And what happened was, is we realized when everyone is rooted and grounded in their own tradition and speaking from that place, that it's actually a richer kind of experience, and that we could stand in our own tradition and really receive the gifts and the message of the other traditions. And so to bring this back to your question, well, how does St. Francis, you know, manifest in this community and in this neighborhood and in this city? I would say Francis brought that kind of openness. That for me, anyway, that the symbolism or the spirit that he brings is that he allows each person to be who they are and to stand within their own experience and their own traditions, and to express that and accept that and start there. And so it's not about converting anyone. It's not about getting people to think like us or to do anything necessarily in particular, but to simply accept people where they are and then see what happens.
And I'd just like to add another way to come at that is through what we've learned and are continuing to learn from Joanna about systems and how systems function. So every system has four characteristics, and one of the ones Terry just described is all systems are a whole, and it's from that place that synergy and emergence happens. Systems are also holonic, and so what that means is every system is a whole within a whole, like the nested Russian dolls. And so that's one of the beautiful things to recognize, that we've been able to recognize about how we are emerging here, is we have this holonic structure where each person is a whole, bringing his or her whole life and whole experience, and then a part of something larger. So the whole is greater than the sum of its parts, and that's like really beautifully being embodied here. And another way that I see that happening is in our, with the five houses that Sam mentioned. So, for example, Casa de Paz has a particular charism and way that it is functioning here that is a whole. And so the door is always unlocked in Casa de Paz, and it has a space upstairs where people come to sit in receptive silence and in prayer. And that, so that's a whole within the larger whole of Canical Farm. And the other houses are still maybe taking on some of their characteristics. But within the framework of what we're trying to do here, we really recognize that diversity is a characteristic of a healthy system, and we need that in order to flourish, whether we're a food-growing system or a community of people, or in any system, there needs to be diversity in order for there to be health in the system. So Carrie and I bring a particular grounding in the Franciscan tradition, both institutional and, you know, larger than that. And that's one of the gifts that we bring. And so that's part of what's going on here. But then once again, you know, each person who comes is bringing the gifts that come with their whole life to make something new emerging here that could never have been predicted or imagined. It's all beyond all of our imagination, which is what's so wonderful about that, too. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Hi, this is Jan, and I hope I'm not going to ask you to repeat an answer. I had to jump off the call for a bit. But I loved hearing what you were saying about we really don't have a lot of control, and that so much of what happens and indeed what needs to happen could well be beyond our imagining, and it takes its own form in its own time. So I'm wondering what surprises come to mind for you that you could not possibly have foreseen as a result of all your works, but really was astounding as you saw, this is why it happened this way.
Oh, Jan, I love that question. And I mean, I could probably answer it. It would take me 2 hours, and I would just be getting started because there's so many things like that. But I'll just tell you the one that most comes to mind as I was listening to you ask. So I've been praying for people to come join me in community for many, many years, you know, more than 30. And so I say, be careful what you pray for, and prayers get answered in ways you couldn't imagine. So the way that Pancho described, we had known each other through various venues, but the way that he ended up here was in this miraculous moment that couldn't have been imagined or predicted, and was totally this example of emergence. So our friend, our mutual friend Kit from back east was out here, one of my closest friends, visiting, and she wanted to go over to the Meta Center. So we went over to go to the Hope Tank gathering. This was like 2.5 years ago. And Pancho was there. And so Pancho, you know, I hadn't seen him in a while, and I start telling him about how things are finally starting to kind of come together and this fledgling community we've been trying to get happening for years. And he tells me about, you know, his own ideas of me bringing together some people to form a community, and we say to each other, well, let's stay in touch about this. And, you know, I'm very excited about this conversation, but I've had this experience many times over the years with people, so I kind of file it away, and I walk out of the house, and I get to my car, and I check my cell phone, and I have a message, and it's from our neighbor who owns the house right across the yard. And turns out, well, of course, just this morning he finds out that the house is going to be open and for rent, and do I know anybody? So I immediately, it takes me 24 hours to track down Pancho because he doesn't have a phone, but when I finally find him, I say, you want to come over and look at this house? So he comes over and he looked at the house, and he's like, this is the place. And it was about a month and a half later that he moved in, so I couldn't have imagined or predicted that that would have happened from that, you know, that moment. And there's just been so many moments like that of magic. It's like magic or grace or emergence, whatever way you talk about it, that continue to happen. And that's what I mean when I say, like, life is living me now, life is living us. There's a way that when you just get into the flow, you just get to coast a little bit rather than everything being so hard, because there is a way that life just helps to live you.
Mm, that's wonderful. Thank you so much, Anne.
Yeah, thank you.
Did that answer your question? Was that enough?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Hi.
Hello. Yes. Yes. I wish for things, but this morning I was reading the news, and apparently in Illinois just recently, a naturalist named Terrace Ingram, who has been doing research on bees for like 50 years, and he has, in over the past 15 years, he's been finding a way to make them resistant to the Monsanto Roundup. And then there was an incident. Some inspectors came in, destroyed his hives, even the queens. He can't prove his, you know, claiming that the bees were diseased. Anyway, the whole story is on the news. That doesn't matter. But that's also a moment. And I was just wondering if you had bees on your farm. And also, and I noticed that the reaction by other bee owners and the raising bees in Illinois is they all kind of went underground and didn't want to register their hives because there'd be, you know, there's this fearful, frightful targeting going on. And I'm just wondering, how does a person respond in that, you know, a canticle farm? How do they respond in a moment like that, when these kind of things that are blown up in the news and, you know, maybe small by comparison to what's really happening, we don't know. What would you do? What do you think about that?
Well, this is Terry. So to answer the question about the bees, we do have bees here. And we have a woman who is taking care of those bees, who has brought them in and is taking care of those bees. I think we have four hives now. And it's wonderful to share this space with the bees. To answer the other question that I heard is how do we respond? How do individuals respond to Canticle Farm, to news like this when we have these media stories and things like that? And I think I can tell you how I respond. I pay attention to what comes up in me when I hear things like that. I want to pay very close attention to my own truth and the suffering or the pain that is being expressed through this story, and really ponder that first, really take it in, and live with it. And first of all, learn, you know, what is it, which are the stories that call my attention like that? One of the things, I'm going to use an analogy here. One of the things that I learned with Bill Plotkin, and for those who may not be familiar with him, he's a depth psychologist and a wilderness guide and the founder of Animus Valley Institute in Colorado. And one of the things that I learned through his working with him is that when you go out onto the land, and if you're receptive, there will be beings that show up. It may be a lizard, it may be a hawk, it may be an insect, it may be a tree, but whatever being shows up in your consciousness, that being has a gift to give you, a message, something. It may not even be rational as far as, I don't mean a message like in words, but it has something to give you, something to teach you. And I would use that analogy for the same thing with everywhere else in our life. When we hear stories, there are lots of stories out there, but there's only particular stories that touch our heart. And so we want to pay attention to those particular stories. And if it's about bees, then the bees are trying to tell us something. I mean, us as an individual. So if it's bees that are touching your heart in this story, then I would pay attention to that and see where it leads you. Just see what it is that they might be wanting to share with you about the condition of our world and what you might do with that.
Thank you.
And with you, as a canticle farmer, I feel a deep calling to do something around love, love in action. How do we manifest love in action? And as a matter of fact, right after this call, that is going to be ending, you know, 10:30 this time, at 10:40, some of us, we're going to jump in our horses, in our bikes, and we're going to go to the park in International Avenue and International Boulevard and 6th Avenue, because there's today is the planetary day of the March Against Monsanto. And so here in Oakland, we organize, and there's the People of Color March Against Monsanto there, and we're going to be speaking our truth. And why is it that institutions, unethical institutions, are partnering with corporations like Monsanto? Why is it that the University of California and Monsanto are okay by chopping down 22,000 trees between Berkeley and Oakland? And they want to, after that, they want to use 1,600 gallons of Roundup to spray, to poison our land, to poison our water, and that it is okay that, and that we won't do anything. Well, they don't get that, right? We are the love of the earth that is manifesting through ourselves, and when we see things like that, we're going to get together as bees, and we're going to pollinate and cross-pollinate and bring that juicy and sweet honey of disobeying with great love. And we're going to break the law of man to follow the law of love with as much courage and as much respect as we can, because we are one of the most intolerant generations on the history of humanity. And that intolerance is started with Gandhi, it started with Martin Luther King, it started with Dorothy Day, it started with Emma Goldman, with Cesar Chavez, with Dolores Huerta. We're intolerant with oppression, we're intolerant with violence, we're intolerant with killing the earth, and we are tolerant with the people practicing oppression. That's different. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to come together as bees. We're going to get very strong. We're going to start flying and, of course, pollinating. There, so get ready for what the month is going on, because we're planetizing the movement.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Excellent question, Pancho. Thank you.
Hi, this is Bill. I guess this question is sort of a follow-on to what Pancho was just talking about, but I lost my thought.
It's fine.
Go to the next one. I got to recapture it.
Okay. No.
Hi, this is Audrey. It's really great to hear all of your stories and perspectives. The question I had was kind of from at the beginning of the conversation, and when you mentioned Francis of Assisi and how he reached out to the poor and suffering, I was kind of curious, what does suffering mean to you? And also in the context of how you intentionally chose to live in the community that you live in, what, I guess, why or what inspired you to choose that location?
Hi, Audrey. So, well, I want to just, I guess, answer that by saying this is my home, and it has been always been my home. I've wandered to a few places. I lived in New York City with Dorothy Day, and lived in Las Vegas with this campaign at the test site, and I lived for a time in Santa Cruz when I was going to college. But most of my life, I've lived here, and our children are the fifth generation in my family in this neighborhood. So in the deepest sense, my roots are here, and it's my home. You know, we say that we chose to stay here because other people didn't have a choice to leave, and that's part of what it means for us to be in solidarity and in accompaniment. You know, I recognize that I have a lot of privilege, that I have... you know, I don't have control over the fact that I was born in a particular time to a particular family with a particular color of skin and particular opportunities. I do have a choice about how to share and leverage and use what's been given to me, and I think also a responsibility to give it back. And so that's what I've tried to do with my life as well in this neighborhood and in the raising of our children here. So I hope that answers the question about why we're here. And then about suffering, you know, I think there's lots of ways that suffering manifests. And one way it manifests is that people don't have their basic needs met, you know, the things that we have a right to because we're, you know, living, breathing beings on this earth. We have a right to housing and food and safety and lots of those needs are not getting met, and I think it's directly because of the disproportionate way that resources happen to be distributed in our world, with people getting more wealthy while people get more poor. So that's unjust, and I want to stand with my life and say that, you know, It's about justice, not charity. We're required to be living out of a place of justice so that people have their basic needs met, and that kind of suffering is intolerable, and we have to do what we can to address it. And one thing that I think we can do here in a very practical way is make accessible, healthy, organic food to people who otherwise couldn't afford it or wouldn't have access to it, because in this neighborhood, we don't have thriving farmers markets and, you know, grocery stores that sell healthy organic food. In fact, in our neighborhood, we have corner stores that are three-quarters what's in there, if not more, is alcohol and sugar-based drinks and packaged and processed food. And that's what people have access to who, you know, walk to stores here. So what we're trying to do here is at least to be able to bring healthy food into the neighborhood through growing it and giving it away. There's the ways that people suffer because their basic human needs are not met, and then there's the ways that people suffer because their spiritual and emotional and psychological needs are not met. And so there's that all needs to be addressed in a holistic kind of way. And I think that partly we are in deep pain and grief. To be alive in this time is to be in pain and grief, whether we're aware of it or not, because we are members of the living, breathing body of Earth, and our Earth is suffering. And so we, as members of that body, are suffering. And people, we live in a culture that tells us, you know, not to suffer and gives us lots of ways to be in denial about that. So all the ways that addictions get played out is also part of suffering. And once again, just trying to be in relationship with people, a kind word, a friendly nod, a hug, those are ways that we can start to address the suffering as well. So I just realized it's a lot of words. I hope I answered your question.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Hi, Anne. Hi, Terry. This is Sarika. Thank you so much for speaking. I'm very excited about the strong intertwining of spirituality and service, and your strong roots and your spiritual practice really moved me. I'm just wondering, you know, if you can give guidance to people. Like for me, I've really only started delving into my spiritual practice more seriously in the past year or so. And it's not about timing, but I wonder from your own lives, you know, how long, and it doesn't have to be about a time necessarily, but more around what did you notice as the process for you in terms of, you know, firming your roots, becoming whole, and then feeling like your cup was flowing, overflowing, and also at the same time finding your life purpose, whatever that may be. You know, and I recognize that this is a very, you know, it's a very personalized type of question for each person. But I'm just wondering if you could just share maybe how your spiritual practice slowly transformed into the service that you now do so, or have been doing for so many years, how they go hand in hand, and how one sort of led to the other, or how one feeds the other.
Well, I'll take a stab at that, and I'm hoping Terry will as well. I mean, I think that I was born in 57 and raised in this radical, you know, more and more I see radical Franciscan parish here in East Oakland, where the Vatican II, you know, happened in our parish. There was lots of lay leadership, and the winds of change in the church were blowing strong in this community. So I grew up in sort of a blip, a moment in time where there wasn't a disconnect between service and spirituality in the way that I experienced it. I mean, I always had the message from the time I was young that the two of them went together. I mean, to be a Christian, to be a follower of Jesus meant actually getting out there and doing something about it. And I can remember wondering, you know, also as a kid, you know, does this message just end on Sundays when I walk out the door? It didn't seem to me it did, but I would have liked to have seen some more people getting active about it. So I remember thinking about that too. But somewhere I think I got the message pretty deeply. Both two things went together. And when I was 19, I went to the Catholic Worker because I wanted to embody the works of mercy, and I wanted my extra coat, you know, to belong to the poor. I really felt like it was about justice, and that pulled me there right from the start. So I guess to answer your question, I was just raised with that in my family and in my parish, and the modeling that I saw, there was enough of that there for me to know that those two things went together. And then as I've just, you know, lived my life, they just have deepened together. So I'm going to pass it to Terry and see what he has to say about it. I think he came from a different perspective, so I think it'd be rich to hear it.
Actually, I'd like to make sure that I understand the question. What I'm hearing the question as is how is my, kind of boiled down, how is my action related to my spiritual practice, service, my action and service related to my spiritual practice? Is that the sense of it?
Yeah.
And some history around that, maybe, how they came together?
I'm sorry, I didn't know whether I was on mute or not. Yeah, I mean, I would say it's a two-part question, one where maybe your thoughts, I mean, how your spiritual practice led to sort of your inner transformation and your views on service, and then now how your views on service help feed your spiritual practice.
So So it's interesting to hear that. The way I'm hearing it is was a question that was raised in our Wednesdays on Fridays last night. And the way people were framing it was around action and contemplation, which is so that's a long-standing threshold that and discussion in, at least in my Judeo-Christian, goes back hundreds of years. I'm not sure that I'm going to be able to say much or add much to that discussion. But I'll start with my own experience. And I was raised in an unchurched, as unchurched. My family was unchurched and came to Francis and Catholicism through fundamentalist evangelical groups. And I would say that there was a part of my dissatisfaction throughout my spiritual life was this, or through my life, so I don't want to maintain that distinction or that threshold between spiritual and not. Part of the dissatisfaction that I have felt in my life was that these two things did not come together. To try to answer your question from that perspective was to pay attention to that dissatisfaction and not dismiss it, because that was my experience. And I think what we tend to do is to allow others to tell us what our experience is, or to dismiss that experience because it doesn't seem to fit other people's experience. And so if there's a dissatisfaction around how service and spirituality is coming together in my life in the way I'm experiencing, in the way that I'm seeing it, is to pay attention to that and honor that dissatisfaction and to follow it to wherever it leads, regardless of what others are telling you. I mean, certainly take in teachers and take in what people are sharing with you, but I don't let it trump your own experience. Because it will come together. It comes together in you. That's the place where it has to meet. And so if it's not, that's where you put the attention.
Thank you so much.
Great, thank you.
I was wondering, Annie and Terry and Pancho and Sam, I'm thinking if we can end with like a song. If you can lead us, like, I attended one of Joanna Macy's workshops, Annie, and you were leading a song and we were following, something like that, or if you all just want to, I think that would be a befitting way to kind of pay tribute to St. Francis and also what you stand for.
We want a song?
Yeah.
Sorry? Hello?
Okay, so we're here. Okay, so here, the one, when you said song, did you have one in particular in mind? I've got one, but did you have one in mind?
No, I can't remember, but I remember the experience, I think, at one of the workshops when you used to say one line and the others were repeating, either something like that, or it could be just you're enough people right there and you could all kind of sing. And
okay, so I'll sing a line, and then can we hear anybody sing?
Yeah. I'm good. Yeah, sure, I can. Do you want me to unmute everyone? So do you want us to follow you?
Okay, so we'll do it one line at a time, and then we'll sing it all together. And we don't know who wrote this song, but we know it came out of New Orleans after the disaster there. So this is a great song that we sing.
So I've unmuted everyone. If anybody wants to.
Here we go. I'm gonna let life move me.
I'm gonna let life
me. I'm gonna let life stir me deep.
I'm gonna let life stir me deep.
I'm gonna let life wake me from an
Me.
I'm gonna laugh all my laughter.
I'm gonna laugh all my laughter.
cry all my tears.
I'm gonna cry all my tears.
I'm gonna love the rain as deeply as the sun when it clears. Okay, all together. Here it go. Here we go. I'm gonna let life move me. I'm gonna let life stir me. I'm gonna let life wake me from an ancient sleep. I'm gonna laugh all my laughter. I'm gonna love the rain as deeply as the sun clears.
That's beautiful.
Thank you
so much, Annie and Terry. We'll just now, in a minute of silence, we will express our gratitude to you, and then I'll unmute everyone and give them an opportunity to thank you. So just a minute of silence and deep gratitude to Annie and Terry and Sam and Pancho and Elijah and everyone else who's doing all this good work.